Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Ben. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, leaders, and decision makers in the world of tech. We talk about developments and big movements in the tech industry, along with stories, anecdotes, and advice for your own career. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we have Martin Permantier, who is owner of Shortcuts, also an entrepreneur, an author, and a keynote speaker. Welcome to the show, Martin.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Could you give us a bit of insight into what service Shortcuts provides?
Well, we are an agency based in Berlin with 30 employees, and we develop basically corporate identities. And we do that looking in three dimensions of a brand. That's corporate design, corporate communication, and corporate culture. And culture has been a much more important aspect of a company in the last years because people need to find employees here, especially in Germany. So we developed strategies based on the finding of the true values of a company. And so we base these values on the how they do things, why they do things, and for what a company does what they do. And a lot of companies do not communicate that. They just talk about who they are and what they do. So going into that matter of values also quickly leads you to the mindset, to the emotional leadership, and all these aspects of modern culture in companies.
Excellent. You mentioned culture there, which is a really interesting point for me. I'll come back to that in a little bit. Just to keep the ball rolling here, I'm really interested in your personal story. What's your career history and how did you end up doing what you're doing today?
Well, like many of us, I went around a lot of corners. So I started with studying architecture. And after I finished my studies, we went into the marketing of real estate projects. So I could have my own company, and that was great, being my own boss. And in time, we expanded into various branches, and our portfolio became broader. And, you know, the internet started and all these things. So we, in time, we became a full-service agency that does whole corporate identities. And during that time, culture became more and more important. And also because I was personally interested into self-development, I could connect that with the work more and more. In the 90s, I thought there was work and there was self-development, you know, going meditating or doing things like that. Because in the 90s, when you ask a manager, do you meditate? They would say, what do you think? I'm not crazy. You know, I work. You know, I don't meditate. And if you ask the manager today, do you meditate? Of course. You know, it connects me to myself, to my mind, to my peace and mindfulness. So now we offer a path of leadership with a 360 development program for companies that includes self-development, team development, and organizational development. And as a foundation, we use the model of the mindsets.
Okay, brilliant. Now on mindsets, you have a book released, I believe, called Mindset Matters. Could you give us the concepts behind this?
Yes, we just translated it in English, so it's available on mindsetmatters.info. And it's the concept started in my mind 35 years ago when I read Viktor Frankl, and he says this very important sentence, the space between a stimulus and our response is the room of our inner freedom. And that ticked me a lot at that time, and I thought, I want to be free inside of myself. You know, I don't want to be stimulus response. You know, I want to evolve inside. So I studied a lot of writers and thinkers that looked at the mind as something that can evolve. So it's not like you are who you are when you're 20 and then finished, you know, but you can develop mind and feelings through directing your awareness and expanding your consciousness. So that led me to the studying of mindset. And then I came across various models. Some was are more common spiral dynamics, for an example. It's one of the models that you also find in companies that kind of combine the ideas of evolutionary thinking and the world of the companies.
So you were mentioning some of the processes, one of which was expanding consciousness. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, maybe it's quite simple. If you ask a leader what qualifies him to be a leader, he often doesn't know. He said, I was elected. And did you study leadership? No. So how do you do it? Well, I just do it. So, and if you ask in a company, do you have a common understanding of your leadership? You have principles. Yeah, we have something written down, but basically it's a question of character and so and so. And you have this concept of a born leader. But if you look at what a good leader was in the 40s, let's say in Germany in the 40s, what was a good leader? Today you would throw him into jail. Yep. You know, what was a good leader in the 50s? Today nobody would like to work for him. Absolutely. What was a good leader in the 70s? So there is kind of an evolution, and there's a quality of leadership that you can study, and applying models of evolutionary psychology helps to understand that leadership is a path. And that you, by self-development, can expand your capabilities of leading.
Mm. I've spoken to a lot of leaders in tech recently, and some of them kind of get thrown into the role of leadership.
But it's actually a skill you can learn by self-development. Because if you understand that the mindset of an expert is different of a manager, is different of an entrepreneur, those are totally different kinds of thinking. And when you make an expert a manager, of course, he's in conflict within himself with different mindsets. Mm-hmm. Because one is skill orientated and the other is people orientated. So he always has to switch. Yes, and doesn't know, am I now the expert? And if I'm not the expert, will they not respect me anymore? So I still have to keep up with my skills. You know, or am I the leader who looks at them and tries to empower them and tries to make their work easy and help them to develop and grow?
What do you think the most important traits are for someone to lead a team?
It depends. It depends what kind of team. Let's say if you lead a team in an army, you know, it's totally different than you lead a team in a hospital or in a social organization. So there's nothing like the ideal leader. It depends on the circumstances and depends also on the quality of people you have in front of you. If you're really open-minded, people, coaches who did systemic training, it's different than if you're with people who are, let's say, working in a warehouse and just are there for the job and for the money and for the hours, and tomorrow they're gone. So there's nothing like a perfect leader, but there is a perfect match maybe to the context.
I'm curious about, you know, the pandemic that we're all in right now. The future of business is changing. And I've seen a statistic that in the US, people working from home has gone from 1 in 50 down to 1 in 3. How do you think this change has affected the culture in business, people working remotely?
Well, that's a very good example how we collectively also change the mindset. Because in the past, people would say, no, I don't allow home office, because then people don't work. You know, that was how we looked at them. That was our construct of how people are. People are lazy. You know, you need to kick them and then they need to work, and they need to control them, give them numbers, check on their numbers. And if they perform according to the numbers, they're good workers. And suddenly you lose that control and you realize, well, they work at home. They will even work better often. That's what the feedback I get from many entrepreneurs. And they're more free, they're more self-determined and more sovereign in what they're doing. So it's a change in culture and it's a change in people. And maybe let me explain with the 6 mindsets and what the book says. You know, we learn the mindsets as we grow up. And this findings, we use the findings of the development psychologist Jane Lovinger, who studied how our mindset changed when we are a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, 16-year-old. You know, you don't perceive the world in the same way. So we expand our competences and our understanding of ourselves and the world around us. And in the first phase, let's say, we call it the self-orientated impulsive mindset. You're unconscious of your thoughts and you're unconscious of your feelings. It's just yourself and the moment and the impulses. You know, it's me, me, me. I want this. I want that. I want applause. I want attention. I think I'm the middle of the planet, the center of the world. You know. And then you grow up and learn new competences. And that stage is we call it when you have suppressed thoughts and suppressed feelings. You see, oh, what do the neighbors say? Oh, I need to obey to mama. Oh, if dad sees me doing that, oh, the teacher says we need to do that. So it's like you're 8, 9 years old and you have all these external authorities talking to you. You know, and the mindset we use there is pretty much dualistic. And once you enter, we call it pre-puberty, you start to have conscious thoughts. But your feelings are still a lot unconscious. That's why we are so crazy. When we are 12, 13, you just don't understand your feelings. There's this thing happening in you, but you understand your thoughts and you start to memorize your life also in a different way and start to compare yourself with others, you know, rationalize things, functionalize things. You study science, physics, chemistry, and all these things, you know, and your mind suddenly realized, the world is like a big clock, you know, complex, complicated clock, you know, and I'm a part of it and everything's kind of mechanical and you can grasp everything with numbers and things like that. And once you become in later puberty, you start to be more aware of your feelings. Yeah. First of all, the good ones, and you want to keep them. You know, so yeah, that's what's called self-determining sovereign mindset. You say, I want this, I want that, you know, I'm great, you know, I'm super smart and want a good life, just do it, and all these ideas about life, you know, and each mindset expands it. Because the next mindset gets you more in touch with the wholeness of your feelings and also the shadow aspects, your sadness, your broken heart, you know, your compassion. And you also start to see that you're different personalities. You're not just one, you're many. Yeah, and you realize, wow, I'm many, you are many, great. Communication is a miracle. Hey, we understand each other maybe a bit, you know, and start to be with more relativity and accept also the world more in its complexity. Oh, there are black ones, white ones, big ones, small ones, great, we're humans. And there's nature, super. So all these are now part of your mindset. The next is expansion. And when you expand even further, like when you're in your 20s or so, it's called systemic autonomous mindset. That's when you start to understand your own subjectivity. You know, you're a man, I'm a man, I'm from Germany, you're from England, so we have a different culture. Maybe I don't understand your humor all the time, you know? And vice versa, things like that. And so we're just cast into this cultural frame. We cannot escape. So, of course, everything I say is totally subjective, and what you say is subjective. You know, we start to be aware of this construct we're in and how is that fueled by our emotions and by our things we created. So, and as I describe this, of course, you can also see how that is active in history and in culture. Like certain cultures were very self-orientated, and also certain leaders are very self-orientated, and you see them in their behavior. Especially these days, it's pretty obvious who are the self-orientated me guys, and who are maybe the dualistic guys, good and bad, me or the other, blaming, shaming. They're just in that mindset, and they're what is called pre-rational. They do not accept the facts. They have not reached the rationalistic functional mindset and are not trained to use that properly. Accepting facts, accepting science, yes. And then there are a lot of these number guys who are totally into, this number, that number, and try to create reality out of numbers. And it is the illusion of effectiveness or efficiency, the illusion of efficiency. You know, if I have the right number and if we grow, the world is going to be better. If the BIP grows, we're going to have a nicer world. And just no, just doesn't work that way. Yeah. And that's the stage we're in. And then we become more self-determined and sovereign. And those leaders will empower people. They will say, what do you want? You know, what do you want? And we have a lot of these coaches and trainers, you know, do your thing, self-optimization, you know, become yourself. That's that mindset active in leaders and in culture. And since maybe the year 2000, we become more reflective and look at life with more relativity, like the rights for minorities, the rights for women, equal pay, and all these topics that people were totally not aware of 50 years ago. Even though they were there, they were not seen. So each mindset sees more and is more able to deal with the complexity of life. Yes, and the systemic autonomous mindset sees that you do not exist without the others. You're part of nature and you don't exist on your own, but at the same time, you're a conscious stream that is autonomous from the other. Like your conscious stream is different from mine. So we meet now, you know, we exchange some thoughts, but then your stream goes somewhere else and mine goes somewhere else. And that's kind of the reality of us. And looking at that, you come to totally different conclusions as a leader, and you start to think more globally. So these changes are also very visible now in the corona crisis. If you look at how people frame these crises, what kind of narratives they use, you can pretty easily detect their mindsets. You very easily detect the self-orientated. You know, they're the most obvious. And the dualistic ones, yeah, the religious one. Oh, God doesn't want us to wear masks. You know, he gave us the nice air and things like that. And you think, hey, it's totally pre-rational. And the guys who says, oh, the numbers are like this, the numbers are like that. Yeah. So what we need is leaders with a more developed mindset, or with the ability to use it more. And also from, we see that with people working from home, to come back to your question, that only, that you can see that the leaders that have problems with that usually have a rationalistic functional mindset. They don't trust you.
That's exactly right.
Because they don't see the emotional aspect of it. They don't see that it's nicer for you to be with your kids or with your partner, and that you will, if they value it, they will give it back. Yes, and work as self-responsible people. Yes, but they will look at you as a functional item that is exchangeable. Yes. And leaders who are more in self-determining sovereign mindset, that say, yes, use your freedom, yeah, empower yourself, go for it. So new leadership needs expanded mindsets.
Do you think that we can replicate business culture remotely?
Well, it's difficult. Today I had a call with a few entrepreneurs, and we talked about how to make virtual meetings more emotional. And the most funny thing about this talk was nobody thought even about it. And then they realized that they regressed in their behavior and became less and less emotional during these video calls. Mm. They said, oh, let's go right to the numbers. Who did this? Who did that? Who did that? And you say, hey, do you usually start a meeting like that? No, you ask, hey, how are your kids? How was it yesterday? Oh, how's the weather? Did you come here nicely? You do some kind of small talk.
Yeah.
Yes. And in virtual meetings, you don't do it.
Strange.
Right. And the other thing is you use your facial expression and your gestures. You know, you do something with your hands and your face and yeah. Say hi. Yeah? And then you look at these people in video calls. They sit there like they're watching TV or they're not even looking at the screen because they're doing emails at the side. And you think, hey, guys, this is totally rude.
Yeah.
Imagine somebody on the meeting table doing his emails. He would say, hey, could you please leave? I mean, we're in a meeting here, you know. So it's kind of we lose our ability to connect virtual because we don't see the body. We don't feel that they see us. So I told them, see, I look at them. I look at you now. And I told them, only two look at me. Two of you look at me. That's not polite. I'm your guest. Look at me. No, everybody would look at me if I'm at your table. But now you don't. Why don't you? That irritates me. Yeah. I don't know if you like me or not, or if you don't give me signs that you like me. You don't even put your name there. You just have your last name, and I cannot even call you by your first name. Yeah, so it's impolite. You don't introduce yourself properly. So we went on and on. So look in the camera and smile and nod and use your gesture and say, yes, yes, good. Yeah, what you say is good. And really stare in it. And also, what's in your background? You know, it part of impression. Do you have proper lightning? Yeah, do you have a proper sound? If somebody has a strange sound, you think, oh, I don't want to listen to that guy.
Yeah,
if they sit in front of a window and he's all black and you don't see their face, and you think, I mean, who goes like that to a meeting? You know, would you color your whole face with a cloth so nobody sees it? But in a virtual meeting, you do it. So it's really also about awareness and emotional awareness if you can replicate a business culture. And we have this tendency in crisis to regress in our mindset. So a lot of companies experience this now, kind of a fallback to the rationalistic functional mindset. No, the numbers count. It's a crisis. And they lose all the emotionality, all the connection in the team. And then it's hard work to build that up. Because you can buy machines, you can buy people, but you cannot buy culture.
Do you think the managers and business leaders in the situation that we're in will have to change the fundamentals of the way they conduct themselves? Or do you think the basic principles of leadership remains the same?
Oh, what are the basic principles?
Don't ask me.
No, I don't think you need to change, you need to grow. So what was good in the past, you can keep. Let's say if it's good if you feel powerful and you have your power, as like your free child is in yourself and it feels safe in yourself, you know, and you're full of energy and it's good. If you're not, your inner child, or let's say your five-year-old is not saving you, he always acts outside, you know, and pushes people around, you're fire, and he does things like that. So it's good to have your power included, and it's good to accept rules. But if you're just into rules is the way of leadership, and that's the principles, we need to stick to the rules, you know, it's not so good. Because if you just stick to the rules, you're pretty much not very efficient. But if you just look at efficiency, you also lack something. These are the number guys who do not want to have you in their home office. They want control. Yes. So they need to expand into more growth mindset, as we say, to empower people, you know, and use a crisis as a chance to grow.
Absolutely.
Yes. And you can see that, you know, people who don't do that says, oh, when a crisis, oh, it should be like yesterday. Now, why is it not like it was? No, it's life. Life changes. That's the nature of life. And life has surprises. That's the nature of life. It's not a linear thing. You know, it's kind of spreading out in all directions. And I think what they need to learn also, leaders, is to lead emotionally. And many cannot do that because they're afraid of their own emotions, of the whole full spectrum. So of course they are, oh, I'm good, I'm great, I'm happy. Yes, like the emotional world of Instagram, everybody's happy.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Everybody has a good time. But that's not reality.
Exactly.
You know, that's kind of a fake. So to look really into that and be touched also about what is happening in the world. It is real suffering and it's a real change. And we cannot just, you know, switch on the old again and do, oh, we're going to fly again for £10 to Malta and things like that. We knew it was ridiculous. Yes, and we knew that if we expand our horizon into time from, let's say, not thinking about today and tomorrow, but thinking about seven generations ahead, what would we need to do to make this world a livable place where we're in harmony with nature and other people? If that's the basic principles of your leadership, you do not need to change them. But often the basic principles of leadership are ruled by numbers, and our God is growth. But we know that growth is kind of an illusion. We cannot grow. Everybody knows that, who is in, let's say, third grade school. There's an end to that. But this mindset does not want to accept the next reality, which is maybe post-growth age or so, because we lack the visions of that. We think everything will fall apart. And the interesting about the virus is kind of it's slowly doing something. We don't know yet what. But it does demand a change in our mindset.
That's so interesting. I'm curious to find out your opinions on having physically separated teams and boosting or maintaining a team morale during remote working. How do you go about doing this at Shortcuts?
It is difficult, I must say, because also people are very affected by their own problems, not having the kids in school, not having the kids in kindergarten. So many even cannot work the amount they did before, even if they wanted to. So it is stressful, yes. And also I see that it's very difficult to work remotely creatively.
Mm-hmm.
that's why I say we start to work more functionally. Oh, how are the hours on that project? Who did that? Did you call him and all that? But to really go into a creative space together, it's difficult. And I see that also when I do seminars on mindset, and I used to do them live, then you feel the atmosphere of the room. You have everybody in one room and you know, this is the moment for emotions. Now everybody opens up and we're touchable. Yes, and you create atmospheres, you know, and then the voices change and all that. And to do that on video is very difficult. So maybe there's something that needs to grow or we need to develop by giving it more attention and experimenting more. Because also, as I said, you know, how we do our video calls, we just degenerate. You know, I do it in a very functional way. We don't have to. So I'm actually still looking on ways to do that more or better when we're physically separated. But I haven't found the golden way yet. And it's still experimenting, do it again. And at the same time, I'm looking forward to see the people more.
We're almost perfectly set up for remote working. I say that, but that's in the business side of things. The emotional side of things is very, very different. Would you agree?
Right. Right, because we look at the future often in respect to how technical innovation will change it. But the real change will come from social innovations. Look at the US. What do they need? They need a social innovation. They don't need new handies. New mobiles, we say in German, new mobiles. They don't need faster computers. They have really great fast computers. They can do anything. Like 30 years ago, you would go every year, you buy a new computer because it's faster. Today, it's pointless. Yes? We need social innovation. We need to see more of the shadow aspects of our cultures, more the shadow aspects of what technical innovation created. I mean, climate change, the use of resources, polluting our oceans, that's not gone because of Corona. That's still a challenge. And it's not so much a technical innovation that putting out a boat that collects all the plastic. It's creating social innovation that we don't put the plastic in the ocean.
That is really interesting. And I couldn't agree with you more, actually. I think to finish on, have you got any advice or take-home comments for the listeners today?
Well, I like there's a systemic scientist, Luhmann from Germany, used to say the Germans look at the world too much in substantives and not so much in verbs.
Okay.
Things are like this. This is innovation. But if you use it as a verb, I'm innovating, then you look on life more as something in progress. Things are not like this and like that, and people are not like this or that. They're right now like that, but they will change. So looking at the world as a constantly changing thing, because we tend to look at the world so much, oh, it will end. Oh, this doesn't work. You know, this. It will all fail. We will all go in the next war and we cannot manage it. So as I look at the world as something in progress, and the change of mindset will create a new world. It always has been. Once we changed the mindset in the Renaissance, we created a world where science was possible. Once we changed to the idea of, how do you say that? The age of illumination, say that?
I think so, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, where the self became more important. So that led to revolutions, to democracy, French Revolution, America, independence and all that. And then we entered the world of psychology. And that changed us again. And now we entered the world of systemic understanding. We start to understand how things are connected. And once we really start to feel that, not only think it, we know it by thinking, but once we start to feel it, we are connected, and maybe Corona is a great emotional teacher on one level. Yes, it's a tough teacher, but it teaches us that we are all connected. It's one world and the virus is everywhere. You cannot say, I closed the border and it's gone. No, it will say, hey, here I am. So collaboration will really be the thing we need to do. And for that, we need a new mindset. And certain walls need to fall in our brain. Like where the wall fell in Germany, it first fell in the head. First you thought, we don't need it. And then people suddenly ran to the wall thinking it wasn't there. And then it wasn't there. And magically, they just ran over it and just said, no, it doesn't count anymore. Yeah. So this is kind of the magic that needs to happen. And look at it in a positive way that we can create a good future and we can solve the problem. As humans, we have the ability. We just need to feel it more, you know, and invest into feeling. That's, I think, what's happening right now. And I hope it will also lead to a new kind of leadership with a more expanded mindset.
Well, that's a lot to take in. It's been so captivating talking to you. Honestly, I've just been absorbing all this information. It's so interesting. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been, like I said, amazing and just so interesting hearing your opinions on things.
Yes, thanks a lot. And we have a lot of graphics going with it. And we also send out a poster with all the mindsets.
Brilliant.
Which makes it understandable because it's a bit abstract to talk about it. Well, once you see it.
I've seen the poster myself, yeah.
Yeah. And it works quite fine. And we mail it out. And soon we have the book, Mindset Matters, also available for everybody.
Brilliant. I'll be sure to buy one myself.
Yes. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you've enjoyed it, feel free to give us a follow on SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify. See you next time.